Morning, Ms. Dyer.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Beverly Dyer on behalf of Lance Gatling, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. It is clear from the record of Mr. Gatling's 1995 sentencing that the district court did not apply cross-reference before applying Guideline Section 2A.2.1. Instead, the court made relevant and acquitted conduct findings and grouped those findings about that conduct together with the assault and weapons offenses and applied Section 2A.2.1.
Is it fair to say that it's clear? I mean, it looks a bit muddled, doesn't it? I mean, and you have the district court later explaining what they did, and you put those two together. Maybe it's not clear.
I believe the district court was mistaken in its 3582 ruling because the record of the sentencing does make it clear, and I can explain why for several reasons. First, the court itself never mentioned cross-references
Can we go back one step? Mm-hmm. And that is to the PSIR and what one would assume, since he doesn't contradict it, was the judge's starting point. And as I read the PSIR, the starting point, found at 108 of the joint appendix, is 2K2.1.
That's correct.
Right? So what is there to persuade us that he didn't, not using the exact language, but follow out what 2K2.1 directs?
Because, well, there is no reference to 2K2.1C in any of the sentencing proceedings. When defense counsel first
brings... Not much reference to 2K2.1, right?
Well, there is
at least we have every reason to think he started there.
And that is the guidelines decision. It should remain unaffected under 1B1.10, subsection B1. But the finding at 2K2.1, there's no reference to 2K2.1C, so that
right.
finding was not made in the PSR.
It was not made in the PSR.
And the base offense level was found to be 24, and that was not disputed, and not 32. So when the district court jumped to the level 32 under 2A2.1, it did not do so through any cross-references. I think that's clear because it cannot be implicit in the court's judgment, because when counsel first raised the cross-references at the sentencing hearing, first it was very late in the hearing. It was after the district court had already made a number of findings under 2A2.1 and on relevant and acquitted conduct. When counsel first raised it, the court was unfamiliar with the cross-reference provisions and apparently had to consult a guidelines manual to follow the argument. And then the court rejects counsel's argument. Had the court even...
Why did the court reject counsel's argument?
Was
it because the use of cross-referencing was somehow amiss, or was it because of a different argument as to what the conclusion would be?
I think that this court could read it as two rejection of both the cross-referencing argument and the argument that there should be a 10-year statutory maximum under that grouping of guidelines.
Why was the argument being raised in the first place? It was for the latter reason, right?
First of all, it was only because the court
wanted to have it limited by the 10. Here's the theory that it would be limited by the 10-year max.
And it was to preserve an appellate argument on that, which, incidentally, Mr. Gatling was not.
Why couldn't we read that the district court was rejecting that argument, but not rejecting cross-referencing?
Well, the court appears to have been rejecting both. But even if the court was focused on the 10-year statutory maximum argument, why would the court not confirm counsel? Why would the court stay silent and be unfamiliar with this argument when counsel raises the cross-referencing?
We're here reviewing the decision on the motion to reduce sentence, right?
Correct.
And so we're reviewing the district court's description of the court's reasoning at sentencing, right?
Yes, but...
And so what's the standard we're to use in that? Isn't this really a question of fact of what happened?
The government argues that it's a de novo standard of review, but I think that it could be a factual understanding of the sentencing record. And I think this court
seems
has to
me,
look
I mean,
to
help me
sentencing.
If I'm wrong, that seems to me to be the better way to frame the issue. What actually happened when the district court was conducting its analysis at the sentencing hearing. And the district court later describes its reasoning as using the cross references to get to.
The court has to have been mistaken, because there's no discussion of the cross reference. In addition, Foster and Boney had nothing to do with the cross reference provisions in the
court. No, but they do have to do with the legitimacy of using acquitted conduct. Right. And that,
yes.
It looks to me as if he's interested in them for that purpose, which is also relevant on the cross reference.
And then he goes, using departure language very loosely and not formally as it's intended to be used under the guidelines, goes straight to 2A 2.1 and does not mention ever once any cross-reference. And when counsel raises the cross-reference, if the court had implicitly applied those subsections, although they were not in the PSR, and why would the court have agreed with a level 24 before finding acquitted conduct? And why would the court not say to counsel, "Counsel, you're correct. That is the way that I arrived at 2A 2.1, but I still do not agree with your 10-year statutory maximum argument. And so I am not going to limit the sentence on those grouping of offenses to 10 years. I don't see that the...
Is there something in the law that requires us, that calls for that level of precision in the court's articulation of what it's done?
You're relying on what the court didn't say seems to go a bit beyond what we've normally done.
But this record does not suggest that the court was implicitly and silently applying those two provisions. It suggests, in fact, the reverse. It suggests that the court was not. When the court is unfamiliar with the argument and says to counsel, counsel, I would like to follow along. Excuse me one second.
Citation of that.
It's on page 52 of the sentencing transcript, which is at the end of our appendix, 919-1995 transcript. And on the beginning of the former page, counsel has begun to discuss the cross-references. And the court states, "All right, I'm sorry, go ahead, please." This is at line 6.
Yeah.
"Let me go back to 2K so I can follow this." And then the next court's comments by the court is, "All right, 2K 2.1, that's the firearm provision you're talking about." That does not suggest that the court has implicitly already applied 2K 2.1C. It's not in the PSR. The government has never requested it. The court appears to be to have to refer to the guideline itself.
I don't find that surprising. Do you?
I do. If
I mean, these guidelines are a bit like tax code. If you don't have them in front of you following along, it can be awfully difficult to follow the transaction.
The next thing, the court hears from the government on counsel's argument. Yeah. The government disagrees that it has anything to do with the cross-referencing provisions, and the very next thing the court says is, "All right, I'm going to, I believe that's correct." This is on page 55. Mm-hmm. "And I'm going to stay with the ruling that I've made." The ruling that the court has already made is that 2A 2.1 applies directly, although the court also uses the departure nomenclature incorrectly.
And isn't the, you can stay with the ruling I've made under that and believe that the drug count does provide for sufficient wherewithal to the sentences I've indicated under the ruling that I've made. So, I mean, he seems to be rightly focused on this 10-year maximum problem.
I understand this court's hesitation in disagreeing with a district court's reading of its own sentence in a later 3582 motion, but I think that this record certainly does not support the court's reading that it applied cross-references. The court appears to have adopted the PSR, the use of the level 24, and that would make no sense if the court were applying cross-references.
Which would make no sense?
To adopt the level 24 on 2K 2.1, I think that the court...
What level should the court have started?
Well, what this court is supposed to do under 3582 and 1B1.10...
Yeah, but let's go back. We're
you're still...
To the 95 sentencing.
Well, I don't think that's clear. I think that counsel's observation that the cross-references is another way to get to 2A 2.1 might not have been made had the court not already made findings that it was going to go there. that the court was already at 2A2.1. Counsel's argument was only made in the alternative in response to the court's previous findings that it would apply 2A2.1 regardless. And that was made for the purpose of preserving an appellate argument that counsel was not later than able to make, because counsel did not make an argument based on the cross-references and application of the guidelines on direct appeal for Mr. Gatling. Now, I don't know that I can state what the correct guidelines ruling would have been in the absence of the direct 2A2.1 application, but this court is not, and the district court was not to consider what it would have done. It's to consider what it did do and leave all other guidelines application decisions in place. Thank you.
Time we've gone over, but we will give you back a couple of minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from the appellee.
Good morning. May it please the court, Suzanne Kurt on behalf of the United States.
Good morning, Ms. Kurt.
Good morning. I think one thing that is clear is what the court did not say, and the court did not say, I am rejecting 2K2.1 as a starting point for my calculations, and instead I'm going to adopt 2A. I mean, the court certainly did not explicitly say that. We think the proper approach is that which Judge Williams voiced, and that is to begin with the pre-sentence report calculation of the guidelines, which did, of course, begin with 2K. We don't know why the pre-sentence report did not then go on to apply the cross-referencing provision. There's nothing in the record, as we state, that explains that, but in any event, we believe that the court recognized that that was a proper starting point, and I'd like to point the court to one factor that we think is important, and that is that the government had asked the court to disregard the guidelines calculation because it didn't, as the government put it, take into account the conduct relating to the agent. And the court, Judge Hogan, rejected that. And he stated, I believe this is at pages 33 to 34 of his ruling, that no, he believed that the guidelines had been properly calculated as they were in the pre-sentence report. So he rejects the government's suggestion that the guidelines calculation as it's set forth is to be rejected. In terms of Boney and Foster, we believe the court, those cases, of course, did not advocate rejecting a guideline such as guideline 2.K, the count of conviction. Those cases did not advocate that. So it's not likely that Judge Hogan used those cases to do something that those cases don't provide for in the first instance. And when he was discussing Foster and Boney, he specifically said, reference to Boney, that Boney held that acquitted conduct can be used to, and I'm quoting the court right now, raise the base offense level. This is an older case. Terms such as departure, enhancement, adjustment have been refined over the years, but at this time in 1995, I think they weren't as explicitly used in a particular way. In any event, if there is confusion in the record, and we don't think there is, certainly Judge Hogan's explanation when he was denying the motion explicitly states what he was thinking at the time. And as we've said in our pleading, we really don't think that anything that appellant has argued would give this court pause to reject that, especially reading the sentencing hearing in the light of his later ruling. And one other point I would like to make is that appellant claims that even if this were to be remanded, only that one section of the guideline should be applied, but we think there's no basis for that. The entire guideline would be applied 2K, and that would be include the cross-referencing provision. And so unless the court has any further questions. Yes, Judge Williams.
I'm not sure I understand the last
point. The latter point.
If we were persuaded by the basic argument by appellant, would not the remedy be to remand to the district court for the exercise of discretion under 3582?
Yes, it would be an exercise of discretion, but if the court were to apply, guideline 2K2.1 at that point, which it should, because that's the guideline that's applicable, it would apply the entire guideline.
But I thought the premise of these operations was that bygones are bygones, and the only thing that gets corrected is the thing which is changed by the amendment.
Right, and that's...
So why, if we've accepted appellant's position, then the only problem is this using one route, an impermissible route to a higher base offense level, and therefore that would be corrected and the base offense level would fall, and then you'd have to depart in order to sustain the, or not depart, but just in his discretion refuse.
Well, he would have to, in other words, if he resentenced today, he could do the exact same thing that he did in 1995, because if he were to apply the guideline for the offense of conviction as the amendment provides, which is 2K2.1, he would have to apply that entire guideline.
Why do you say if we've reached the conclusion that he didn't apply the whole guideline, including subsection C, why would we have him suddenly applying subsection C?
Because the court would apply the cross-referencing provisions. It wouldn't just apply one part of the guideline. It would have to apply the entire guideline. There's nothing in the amendment that says you only apply one part of a guideline, you don't apply the other part. With that, I would thank the court for its time and ask it to affirm the ruling.
Yes, Your Honor. At the time of this sentencing, the whole process of amendments was not frequently coming up before the courts. And so, in certain respects, this, since there are often multiple routes to a possible sentence, the significance of choosing one route over another was less important, right? But now,
yes,
with succession of amendments,
yes,
the exact route followed becomes very important. And I was wondering if assistant U.S. attorneys are trying to make sure that the judge specifies his or her exact route.
Well, I certainly think we are. I mean, even though the guidelines...
That certainly did not happen here.
Right. I agree. But I think that as time has gone on, and courts have now, with the passage of time, have gotten much more used to it, and we all know that even though the discretionary, everyone is aware that the court must still correctly apply the guidelines even before it considers a sentence. So I would hope that people are getting the courts to be explicit.
Might be something for the U.S. Attorney's Office to make sure it's happening.
I will carry that message back, Your Honor.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
I don't have very much to add unless the court has questions.
We don't require you to rebut. Go ahead.
But with respect to letting bygones be bygones, I think that Dillon was very clear that mistakes are not to be corrected and that some of these mistakes are going to benefit the government and some are going to benefit the defendant. And those mistakes that was explicit in 1B1.10 and in Dillon. Thank you very much. If the court has no further questions.
Seeing none, case is submitted. You can call the next case.